That blank screen there, be fine. Just want to challenge you about a couple things that we have introduced several times throughout the year. Just want to, again, create some momentum. If you were one of those people who took the challenge to buy one of the 100-verse books, top 100 verses that all Christians should memorize, at least according to that author, I want to encourage you to keep doing that. And if it's been a while before you opened it up, it's okay. No one's going to check, but just keep working through that. This past week, Pam and I were looking at John 14:1. Let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. And there's a great paragraph before or after that, an explanation from the author, just saying that the context of that verse is that the disciples were just told by Jesus, I'm leaving. I'm really leaving. As a matter of fact, they're going to kill me. And you can imagine the panic and anxiety that came upon the disciples, kind of like when storms enter our lives and we feel that anxiety and that fear and that doubt. And so he says to them, let not your heart be troubled. If you believe in God, believe also in me. Isn't that a powerful verse to memorize? So, and if you don't have one of those books, they're available in the on the resource rack in the welcome room. So take that challenge, encourage you to do that. Also want to remind you as we get closer to graduation season and all these different types of things, we have those handmade cards from Vietnam that support the young ladies at the New Life Center. They're beautiful cards. The reason why I say this, I was in a Discover BBC class last night, and a lot of the people didn't know anything about the cards. I'm like, wow, we need to let people know. So they're in there. They're very inexpensive. All the proceeds go to help these young ladies to keep them off the streets. They are beautiful. There's some new designs for those of you who have bought them before. There's some new designs that you want to check out today. And here's how you make yourself available to these things. Don't fly out of church. You're not going to get like a rash if you stay 5 minutes extra and go to the welcome room. Oh no, it's okay. Some of you are like, wow, you can stay a little bit and check those things out. It'd be great. Okay, next slide. Thank you. Back in my day, when I thought of heard the phrase strong man or strong men, I got to tell you, Popeye, the sailor man, he's strong to the finish because he eats his spinach. I hated spinach. My mom tried to use Popeye. It did not work. But I think back to my day about the concept of strong men, and here's what came to my mind. I know this is going to be a cultural thing where some of you are like, who is he even talking about? But in my day, strong men were people like Rambo, or Rocky, or Arnold, or Superman, the original Superman, or the Incredible Hulk, the one that was, you know, turned into the green guy. Those are kind of the strong men that came to my mind when I was thinking, you know, years ago. Today, we have people that are associated with strong men. They include people like The Rock. And some of you don't know what he's cooking, but you can look that up. Wolverine, Iron Man, Thor, and Captain America. And these are some of the strong men that come to mind. And I want you to know, these strong men, these comic book strong men, have created a billion-dollar industry for Marvel Studios. Billion-dollar industry every year. And children and even adults all over the world wear their merchandise. They're just found all over the place. And so this is kind of the concept when we think about strong men. But I want you to know this morning that there are strong men that deserve our attention, even beyond these guys. There are strong men that are really much more important to be thinking about, and you don't have to go on a shopping spree to find them. As a matter of fact, these strong men are found right here in the Scriptures, right here in the Bible. And so we're going to begin a series over the next few weeks called Strong Men of the Bible. And just to give you a little bit of a caveat here, like we did with the series Inspiring Women in the Bible, first of all, this is not just for men, it's also for women as well, because there are examples here that can be appropriate for both genders. But also, I want the men in this room to know this, that the Bible doesn't say that the idea of challenging people or challenging men to be strong is just for a select few. You don't have to be Thor or Captain America. By the way, I loved Captain America growing up as well. You probably wouldn't be surprised to know that I would take the lid of our garbage can. That was the thing I threw. And I actually threw it at kids in the neighborhood. I got in trouble for that. I thought that was so cool. Who needed a... So it was a tin thing. I threw it, and Mom said, no, that's not good. I said, but I'm Captain America. She goes, no, you're not. I'm just getting over that now. But I'm just saying, it's not just for a few. This series is not for just a few select men. As a matter of fact, here's kind of the key verse of our series that's going to be up on the screen. These are the words of Paul. He says this, "Men, listen. Ladies, you can listen as well. Just don't elbow men next to you. Be watchful. Stand firm in the faith. Act like men and be strong." So act like men and be strong. What a great challenge for the men in this room. We are called to be strong. Now, in today's culture, if someone wants to tell you if they're strong enough, they may say, "Guess how much I can bench press?" They'll try to impress you with the number. Or they'll say, "The other day I deadlifted this amount." Okay. Or they'll say, "I'm able to curl this much weight on each bicep." And that's how they define strong. Impressive? Maybe. God's idea of a strong man? Not really. That's good news. The idea of being a strong man. Now, we're going to start today, this morning, this series with a guy named Joseph. I love the story of Joseph. I love the character of Joseph. And he was a strong man. He was a strong man because he fought against something that every single person in this room fights against. It's called temptation. And I want to say this to you. Temptation is hard because it's tempting. I know, you might want to write that down. Temptation is difficult because it's tempting.
Okay, sit in that chair. All right, here's the deal. Marshmallow, for you. You can either wait, and I'll give you another one if you wait, or you can eat it now. When I come back, I'll give you another one, so then you'll have two. But stay in here and stay in the chair till I come back, okay?
Okay.
All right. I'm gonna go do something and then I'll come back.
It smells yummy. It smells really good. So it's up to you. You can have it now or you can wait. Okay? I'll be back. Stay in the chair, okay? Okay. So I'm gonna leave and then I'll come back, okay? So you can either eat it right now or you can wait. Either way, okay? Okay. How'd you do? Did you do good? You did? Yeah.
You wanted to eat it, didn't you? Yeah. So did I tell you I'd give you another one? Okay, now you can have both. You need them.
So nice of that young lady to bring her plate back. Temptation is hard because it's tempting, whether child or an adult. And I would say that we, if we're honest, probably each of us have lost a few rounds with temptation. A couple reasons why. First of all, Satan knows who to put in the ring with us to tempt us. And the Bible also says that temptation ultimately flows from our own sinful desires. And so this is a hard battle, and these are formidable foes that we face in life in temptation. And I would say that too often we probably let temptation make its way into sinful behavior. So it's time for us to kind of man up. It's time for us to be strong men in resisting temptation, and strong women and boys and girls alike as followers of Jesus Christ. We need to be stronger in this area. And so what we're going to do is we're going to talk about what I consider, and I wrote in your notes, strong man tactics that Joseph used against temptation. Things that we can use. He didn't go home and pump more iron, okay, or do more push-ups or more sit-ups. But there are some things that he did, some strongman tactics that he knew he needed to implement in his life in order to deal with temptation. So I want you to take your Bibles with me, if you would, to Genesis chapter 39. We're going to be in Genesis 39 the whole time. So if you have a copy of the scriptures or if you're using a pew Bible, I would encourage you to please turn there with me. Genesis chapter 39, as we begin this story of Joseph, or this part of his story in dealing with temptation. Genesis 39 and verse 1 says this, "Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an Egyptian, was one of Pharaoh's officials. The captain of the guard bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him there." Just a little background before we continue to read. Joseph grew up in a very dysfunctional home. His dad played favorites, and Joseph was the favorite. He had 11 brothers, and most of those brothers did not appreciate the favoritism. As a matter of fact, most of them hated Joseph to the point that they faked his death, sold him into slavery, and went on with their lives. That's pretty intense dysfunction. And dad was just kind of oblivious to the whole thing, and mom is not around anymore. So Joseph, according to this verse, ends up in Egypt. He's ripped from his father, he's ripped from his family, ripped from his home. You also need to keep in mind, he is thrown into a pagan culture. He's not around his religious upbringing anymore. And he's sent into a household as a slave. And I would say that Joseph, at this point in his life, is a very vulnerable man. He's in a very vulnerable situation. And often, temptation finds its greatest strength when we are in vulnerable positions. Either something has happened in our life, or a crisis, or a problem. But it's interesting that in the midst of this vulnerability, we are told in verse 2 that Joseph is not alone. It says, "The Lord was with Joseph so that he prospered, and he lived in the house of his Egyptian master." So God was with Joseph even in Egypt, and I think that Joseph knew that God was there in spite of the surrounding culture he finds himself in. And this verse 2 is important as we look at other things that transpire in Joseph's life, because he does keep in mind that God is with him. So pick up with me in verses 3 through 6. "When his master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord gave him success in everything he did, Joseph found favor in his eyes and became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of his household, and he entrusted to his care everything he owned. From the time he put him in charge of his household and of all that he owned, the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. The blessing of the Lord was on everything Potiphar had, both in the house and in the field. So Potiphar left everything he had in Joseph's care with Joseph in charge. With Joseph in charge, he did not concern himself with anything except the food he ate." It's interesting to me that hundreds of miles away in a totally pagan culture, that Joseph now becomes the favorite again, doesn't he? Now he's Potiphar's favorite. And Potiphar begins to trust him, and he sees God's blessing on his life. I don't know if you saw this in the verses or not, but if you look in your Bible, it says that Potiphar said, "Joseph, you're in charge of everything," which means he was in charge of his business affairs. He was supposed to make sure there was good economy and there was no uprising. And he said, "Joseph, I want you, I trust you so much that I don't even want you to worry about planning my meals. Even though you're my personal assistant, you don't even have to worry about planning my meals. I'll have somebody else do that for me because I want you to concentrate on these other things." So Joseph is in this position. And so we find that he has been elevated to this. He's being trusted. He's being delegated this responsibility. And I would say at this point in the text, Joseph is ripe for temptation. Why? He's still vulnerable. He's successful. He's trusted. And he's given great freedom. Those things can invite temptation, can they not? Ever heard the term that the idleness is the devil's workshop and those kind of things? And even though Joseph was not an idle person, he was successful, but he was still vulnerable. He was still successful, and he was in this position. So temptation is most likely going to come. And here it is, folks, verse 7. Now Joseph was well-built and handsome. So maybe he did have an ab master or something. Maybe he did some push-ups. He was well-built and handsome. This guy was ripped. And he was good looking. And after a while, his master's wife took notice of Joseph and said, "Come to bed with me." Don't need to explain that, do I? "Come to bed with me. Joseph, got my eye on you. Come on." And so there it is. The temptation has arrived. It's Potiphar's wife, and she wants Joseph. And think about the temptation. Does he have any family around? Can he go to the local synagogue and pray? Has he felt rejection in his life? A lot of rejection. Now somebody wants him. Really wants him. "Joseph, you are such a good-looking guy." I don't know the current term of what that means in our culture, so I'm not even going to try, because I'll be told later that was like 8 years ago that we used those terms. I'm just saying, this guy was a looker, so to speak. And she said, "I want you." So the fight is on. The temptation has arrived. Do you think it's a strong temptation? Absolutely. And so Joseph is presented with this opportunity. And it's not going to be easy to fight back, because Joseph wants to please his master, but he also doesn't want to cause any trouble, and she wants him. So he's going to have to do something. He's going to have to do several things. And I'm just here to tell you, please don't be so naive as believers to think that Satan won't tempt you. He will. I liken it to this way. How many parents we have in here? Okay, put your hands down. You may raise them again. How many parents, your kids knew the buttons to push for you? How many of you didn't always respond as well to the buttons being pushed? Okay, all right. All right, you're like, how did they know that? Did someone tell them? They know the buttons to push, right? Satan, for you and for me, knows the buttons. And we have our own desires and temptations that we face. And I'm here to tell you, don't be so naive to think they won't come, and they do, and they are strong. So what are you going to do? Satan wants to take you down. Well, going back to go to verse 8 with me as we continue in this narrative. Verse 7 ends with, "Come to bed with me." It's out there. Verse 8 says, "But he refused. With me in charge," he told her, "my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns, he has entrusted to my care. No one," verse 9, "is greater in this house than I am. My master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God?" Here's the first strong man tactic to deal with temptation. You and I must identify the temptation for what it really is. Identify it for what it really is. I understand that temptation in and of itself is not sin. But we need to be clear of where temptation will take us. It never takes us to a good place. You notice in verses 8 and 9 that Joseph realized, first of all, that if he gave in to her request, he would be violating his trust with Potiphar. You look at the end of verse 8, what does it say? He has entrusted to my care. He trusts me. And if I do this, I am violating my trust with him. So Joseph said this, I believe he was thinking this to himself. Sleeping with her would not merely be a mistake or a lack of judgment or an unfortunate circumstance or an unavoidable weak moment. Joseph believed that when, if he had gave into that temptation, it would be sin. He didn't rationalize it. And he realized, this is going to really break my influence, break my trust with Potiphar. Very much so. And he knew that this was not just, again, just a bad choice. And for us, there are things that sometimes we try to rationalize because we don't identify it for what it really is. Let me give you some examples. That revealing picture, or those harsh words that you post on social media, those are not innocent things or freedom of speech. They are sin. Let's identify it for what it is. That temptation to turn in that homework assignment that someone else did is not creative schooling. It's sin. Let's call it for what it is. Yes? That person who passes on confidential information that was entrusted to them is not a prayer chain. It's sin. But I know they would have wanted me to tell everybody. No, I think they said, don't tell anybody. I'm trusting this to you. That, my friends, is sin. Identify it for what it is. That need for you to blow off stress by yelling at people in your life, it's just good health management. No, it's probably sin. Identify it for what it really is. Joseph said this, did he not? And notice, in verse 8, he said, it's going to be wrong against Potiphar. And then in verse 9, don't miss it. You might want to underline it in your Bible. He says, if I do this, it would be a wicked thing and sin against who? God. So first way that you and I can be strong in dealing with temptation is understand that if I give in to this temptation, identify it for what it is. It's an offense to a holy God. What if I don't get caught? It's an offense to a holy God. Identify it for what it really is. And listen, temptation is not just temptation to do wrong. The Bible also says there's temptation not to do what's right. It says this in James 4. If anyone then knows the good they ought to do and doesn't do it, it is sin. So let me give you some more examples. If you put your career and your success over your family and your spouse, it is not just good marketing, it's sin. If you choose not to serve God's church, it's not time management, it's sin. If you choose to be stingy and not generous because you want to have stability in your life, it is, let's call it what it is. What is it? Sin. So the more we keep calling it that ugly word, maybe we won't do it. I mean, even in our culture, I don't know what the words have been. Lately it's been, I love this word. Somebody lies and they say, well, I misspoke. It's like a political thing. I misspoke. No, you didn't. You lied. I know, but misspoke is so much softer. Let's identify it for what it really is. You lied. You didn't misspeak. I heard exactly what you said. And the idea is if we make ourselves uncomfortable about what it is, maybe we won't do it. Yes? That's why we really shouldn't get rid of the word sin out of our vocabulary. So Joseph did this. The first way he dealt with temptation was identify it for what it really is. Secondly, he did this. Rehearse the consequences of giving into the temptation. Rehearse the consequences of giving into the temptation. Verses 8 and 9 again. He refused with me in charge. He told him, my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything is owned. He has entrusted me. I'll talk to you about this. Joseph realized, if I give in, it's not just identifying it as sin, but there's a consequence. My master won't trust me anymore. You and I need to understand, we never sin in a vacuum. There's also always consequences for our sin. Always a ripple effect on other people, whether it's our family or our friends. And we are accountable to God for this. There's always a ripple effect, whether it's dishonesty, impurity, gossip, greed, whatever it is, it affects other people, and Joseph knew that. Again, in verse 9, my master has withheld nothing from me because you are his wife. How can I do a wicked thing and sin against God? Not only did he call it sin, again, he realized there's a consequence. It's going to affect my relationship with God. So as you and I try to be strong in battling temptation, it's not just identifying the possibility of sin. It's also understanding there are consequences. There are consequences to this. The next time you're faced with a temptation, you need to ask yourself this question. Is it really worth the cost? Is it really worth the cost? I remember, I don't have a great memory, but this I remember, I don't know why, this is probably from 25 years ago. I was sitting in a pastor's conference as a youth pastor. And the guy was talking about protecting your ministry in the area of immorality and being faithful to your wife. So he was talking about that topic. And that's not an easy one to talk about to a bunch of pastors. But I remember him saying this very clearly. If you are tempted to do this, pastors, before you give in, you need to go home and get out a piece of paper and write down the names of every single person that will be devastated by what you're going to do. Like, wow. Write down your spouse's name, your kids' names, people in your church. Write down their names. And when you get done with that list, read it over. And think about what it's going to cost you. Wow. Joseph said, I will not do this because of Potiphar and also because of God. I found this quote to be interesting. Go ahead. Richard Sibbes. Go ahead. Thank you. Satan gives Adam an apple, and it wasn't an apple, but I wasn't going to change his original quote. Satan gives Adam an apple, and in exchange, he takes away paradise. Sounds like a good deal, right? Here's some fruit, I'm taking away paradise. No. Therefore, in all temptations, let us consider what Satan offers, not only what he offers, but what we'll lose. He makes it look good, doesn't he? But he doesn't tell you what you're going to lose. Joseph rehearsed the consequences. Verse 10 gives us another tactic on dealing with temptation. It says, and though she spoke to Joseph day after day, he refused to go to bed with her or even be with her. Day after day, you're the man. Day after day, Potiphar's just not meeting my needs. Day after day, no one's going to know. Day after day, you and me, Joseph, come on. Day after day. But he refused. Here's the third thing about dealing with temptation. You want to be strong, men, ladies alike? Be persistent in refusing temptation because it doesn't stay away for long. Lady, I think I told you no. Yeah, but that was Monday. Today's Tuesday. And I have different makeup on today. I've got a new robe on today. Don't I look nice, Joseph? Boy, are you well-built and handsome. She is playing to his ego. Men never respond to their ego being stroked. Never. Joseph. I mean, of all the men in Egypt, you're the man. No. How about tomorrow? No. How about a week from Friday? Potiphar's going away for a long weekend. No, no, no. She kept coming back. We need to be persistent. You ever have a temptation come back more than once? Yes. You need to learn to be persistent in resisting it because they're not going to stay away. I love this quote from Spurgeon. I don't know if it's exactly about temptation, but I'm going to give it to you anyways. Spurgeon said this, learn to say no. It will be of more use to you than to be able to read Latin. Okay, I know one language and not really that very well, English. Are very good. I'm not sure how that even works. So the idea is, listen, learn to say no. If we can only capture the passion of which our kids said no when they were tiny, and then use it later on when they're teenagers, whereas in our adult lives, right? We used to say no all the time. You're going to be nice to your sister? No. You're going to help with the garbage? No. You're going to clean your room? No. You're going to be grumpy today? Yes, but no. They don't even, right? Remember the time when your kids would just say no all the time? Now you want them to say no. And as adults, we need to learn to say no. Joseph, day after day. I'm going to give you this quote with a disclaimer. It's not going to be on the screen because I didn't even want to put it on the screen. It's from D.L. Moody, and he's been gone for a long time. And he uses a word that is not a nice word, so I'm just apologizing for this ahead of time, but it's really interesting. This is a quote I've never really heard from him before, but dealing with being persistent. Ready? Here's the quote. He said, Temptations are like tramps. Sorry. Temptations are like tramps. Treat them kindly, and they'll return bringing others with them. He's true about the connection to temptation. You treat temptation kindly, it's going to keep coming back. Now, you know what I wanted to put in there? But then I knew I'd get in trouble. I wanted to say temptations are like cats. Treat them kindly, and they will return bringing others with them. Not a real big fan of cats. Maybe just this one time I'll give in to this temptation, and then it won't bother me again. No way. No, no, no. Verse 11. One day he went into the house to attend his duties, and none of the household servants was inside. Here's a fourth way to deal with temptation. We're moving along here. Replace the temptation with something pleasing to God. This is an interesting verse to me. Every single day, she has found a time in each day to say to him, come on. And every day he says no. But according to verse 11, every day he also went into the household and did his job, what he was supposed to do. He did what was right. He fulfilled his duties. So what I'm saying here is this. One way to deal with temptation is replace the temptation with something pleasing to God. Because if you're tempted in an area of your life, but you don't replace it with anything, you're going to default back to the temptation. So let's imagine Joseph. Each day, he stops doing his duties. What he does, he just sits in his room and thinks all day long about how terrible it is that this woman is stalking him, and he wishes there were stalking police, but no, he's a foreigner. And he sits in his room, and as a matter of fact, as he's sitting in his room, sometimes he daydreams about her and thinks about her. Maybe she is pretty. Maybe this isn't going to be so bad. Maybe I should give in just to get her away from me. And does he do any of that? Probably not. You know what he does? He gets up, and he does his job. Does what's pleasing to God. He does his work. And so for us, you have faced with a temptation, you better replace it with something else. Ephesians chapter 4 says this, put off your old self and put on your new self. Put off something and put on something in its place. Here's some examples it gives in Ephesians 4. Stay with me. These are great practical things. If you're tempted to lie, you know what Ephesians 4 says? It doesn't say just to stop lying. It says to do what? What do you think? Stop lying and tell the truth. Whoa, novelty here. It also says in Ephesians 4, don't steal. And it says, as a matter of fact, don't steal. What you should do is put on getting a job and be generous with other people. Whoa, wait a second. That's radical. It says in Ephesians 4, don't use destructive words. And it says, put on words that build people up. It says in Ephesians 4, if you're tempted to be bitter or anger, or bitter or have bitterness or have anger, you need to put on forgiveness and kindness. Put off, put on. Put off, put on. So if you're facing a temptation, put it off and put on something else. If you're tempted in front of that TV to watch something you're sitting or in front of the computer screen, here's the put off. Turn it off, get up, and go for a walk. Get on a bicycle. Go play a game with one of your kids or go have a conversation with your spouse. Don't just go, oh, what do I do? Here's what you do. Turn it off and put on something that's pleasing to God. Right? Folks, is this rocket science? No, but how many times do we find ourselves? We're like, oh, no, I can't do anything. Yes, put off, put on. You feeling sorry for yourself? Tempted to feel sorry for yourself? You know what you need to do? Make a meal for someone. Go give it to them. Put off, put on. Do something pleasing to God. You have a critical spirit, don't raise your hand. You have a critical spirit, you're tempted to have a critical spirit, here's what you need to do. Put off the critical spirit and put on sending somebody a card in the mail and telling them how much you appreciate them. Well, I don't want to do that. Yeah, you do. Because you know what you're doing to that temptation? You're sending it away. Because otherwise you're like, I have a critical spirit, but I don't know what to do. I just sit here, and the longer I sit here, I go right back to it. That's because you're not putting on what pleases God. Joseph did what he needed to do. That's how we deal with temptation. Put off, put on. Let's keep reading. Verse 12, number 5. Here's the fifth way that he did this. It says in verse 12, she, Potiphar's wife, caught him by his cloak and said, come to bed with me. Now she's just getting downright aggressive. Okay, this one means business. Okay, he's within arm's length, and she grabs his cloak. But he left his cloak in her hand and ran out of the house. Here it is, one word, another way to deal with temptation. Number 5, you may need to run. Run. Do you need the spelling for that? There it is, R-U-N, run. Get out of there. Joseph reached a point with the temptation that it was time to run. Now, I think he spent many days in the household and didn't run because he didn't feel like it was necessary, but at this point, it was necessary to run. Listen, you want to deal with temptation, sometimes you need to book it. You need to run. I need to run. We need to get out of there. Joseph realized that in his best discernment that it was time to run. So what does that look like? That looks like if you have something that is just harassing your life, let's say it's something that's harassing your mind. Maybe it's some kind of a video thing or whatever. I don't know what it is. For young people, it could be a video game or something. Maybe that's something that's just harassing your mind and tempting your mind with images or language. You know what? You call me up and say, what do I do, Pastor Jay? I'll tell you what you do. You bring it to me, and I'll get a sledgehammer, and I'll just smash it. Really? Yeah. That's running. Well, it costs a lot of money, so I leave it right next to the TV, but I just never take it out of the case. Yes, you will. Get rid of it. You have someone in your life, in a relationship, who is bringing you away from God. Get rid of them. No sledgehammer required. I mean, sometimes adults and even young people say, I know that this person's not good for me, and I don't know what to do. Sometimes you need to run. Say, bye-bye. Get rid of them. Who knows? It can happen. We need to do these types of things. We need to get rid of it. Don't go there. If you're tempted at a certain, listen, if you're tempted about it in a certain location, in a certain environment, can I just help you out here? Don't go there. You just need to stay away. Don't go to that place. You're tempted to answer a text the wrong way? Turn your phone off. Some of you need to defriend some people. That sounds so harsh. Because if those people are only putting poison and temptation into your mind and into your heart, guess what? You need to defriend them. I don't even know what that really means, but I think it's a phrase. Because you've heard me say this before, especially you Facebook users, you really don't have that many friends. You think you do. I know the number, but they're really not your friends. Okay? And if they're tempting you, get rid of them. If it's someone from the past and they're in your life now and they shouldn't be in your life, you need to defriend them. Run. Why don't we run? Because we can handle it. Especially men. Men don't run. We can handle it. How's that working for you? I got to tell you, it's not always working for me. I can handle it. No. You need to run. You know that verse in the Bible that says God will provide a way of escape? That's his running option. And Jim Elliot had this quote. I love this quote from Jim Elliot. Unwillingness to accept God's way to run from temptation, he said, frightens me what a rebel yet resides within. You know why I don't run? Because of my pride. I'm the rebel. I can handle it. I can't speak for you, but I'm just here to tell you, more times than not, I can handle it, and I don't do a very good job, and I need to run. I'm telling you to run. Joseph ran. Now, there's one more thing I want to take you to, and we're going to take you to the rest of the passage here, so follow with me in your text. Several verses, but very important. And so he runs, and it says, when she saw that he had left his cloak in her hand and had run out of the house, she called her household servants and said, look, this Hebrew has been brought to us to make sport of us. He came in here to sleep with me, but I screamed. Is that true or false? False. She's totally lying. When he heard me scream for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house. She kept his cloak beside her until Potiphar came home. Then she told him the story. This Hebrew slave that you brought us came to me and made sport of me. Wow, she's just twisting the whole thing. It's all your fault, Potiphar. It's all your fault, husband. You brought this guy in our household, and he tried to do this. It's all your fault. But as soon as I screamed for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house. Truth or a lie? Lie. When his master heard the story, his wife told him, saying, this is how your servant treated me. He burned with anger. Joseph's master took him and put him in prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. But while Joseph was there in prison, the Lord was with him. He showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. So the warden put Joseph in charge of all those who were held in the prison, and he made him responsible for all that was done there. The warden paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did. Now, I want you to know, before I give you the last one, I recognize in this text that Joseph has given success by God. He's blessed by God. But you need to understand something that is continually happening here. I'm going to tell you right now, where is he when this is all happening? Where is he when he's being blessed? What location? Prison. I mean, a good day in prison, is that better than a bad day in freedom? Oh, just come on. So he is being blessed by God, but he is in prison for something he didn't do. As a matter of fact, it tells us later on in Scripture, he is in jail for 2 years for something he didn't do. So he stood up as a strong man against temptation, and look where it got him. Whew, this is going to be a kicker here. All right, how do we deal with this? Well, here's the last one. Keep in mind this very important aspect. Don't be swayed by the negative short-term results when fighting temptation. I'm going to tell you honestly and biblically and real life that sometimes when you go against temptation and you resist it, you're not always going to have immediate good results. Have you ever found that to be true? It is true, but don't be swayed by that. I mean, you wish that the Scriptures would open up with something different. I mean, the Old Testament has lots of really cool stories. I kind of wish that when Joseph said no to her, that the heavens opened, God sent down a lightning bolt, zapped her right there, crispy critter, she was done. Joseph's like, yes! Potiphar's like, I didn't like her anyways. And this is like, oh, this is great. You resisted temptation. You're the man! Wouldn't that be cool? That's me rewriting the Bible. But she's like, I want you. I want you. Oh, I want you. No, no, no. And finally he runs. And she screams. And she lies. And he ends up in jail. Wow. That's what you get for resisting temptation, folks. But don't be swayed by the short term. You refuse to be tempted to copy the other person's homework. And for it, you get a lower grade. Woo! Yes! Way to go! You didn't cheat and you got a lower grade. How's that working out for you? That person comes to you and they start to gossip about some information that was supposed to be held in private, and you stop them right before they finish, before they even get started, going, listen, I don't want to hear about that. And then they say to you, fine, I won't ever talk to you again. If you're not going to listen to me when I share information, I'll find somebody else. And so they stop being your friend. Woohoo! Yeah, that's great. Just lost a friend. How's that working out for you? Could happen. You're at work. You're tempted to compromise the numbers. Everybody compromises the numbers. But you won't do it. So the boss passes you up for a promotion. You don't get the promotion. Way to go! Wife's so excited. You're not bringing in any more money. Can't go on that vacation. Way to go! Wow, it sounds like I'm really pushing for you to give in, isn't it? But it's not true. He stayed strong and did what was right, even though short term was negative. He ended up in prison. Because here's how it works, folks. Here's how it works. The Bible says there is pleasure in sin for a season, short term, but long term, consequences. The Bible also says when we do what is right, God blesses us, but sometimes there are human short-term negative results, but long-term, God blesses. I believe, you know what sustained Joseph for 2 years in prison? He knew he did what pleased God, no matter what else anybody else thought or did. So when you resist temptation, please don't expect some angel to show up and go, "You are amazing. You're just amazing." You actually may have other Christians say to you, "What are you, better than me? Not giving in to temptation when you think you're holier than thou?" Just, you're going to have to deal with it. Because there's the allure of the short-term pleasure. And not understand. Did Joseph understand the big picture? He certainly did. One last quote from John Piper puts it this way. Sin gets its power by persuading people to believe that I will be happier if I follow it. Short term. But what happens is the power of all temptation is this prospect that it will make me happier. We all know that giving into temptation and sinning makes you happier, correct? No. But Satan's trying to kind of tempt you into that short term result. I'm just here to tell you that in Joseph's life, he understood big picture, that immediately it may not be a good result, but long term, you are pleasing God. You are pleasing God. You are blessing other people, and God will bless you. I know this was a lot here, but what a great example for us. Joseph was a strong man. In order to be strong, guys in particular, men, young men, you want to be strong, you need to resist temptation and use the life of Joseph. This verse, be watchful, stand firm in the faith, act like men, and be strong. As Joe comes up to close us in prayer, I'm hoping that the Spirit of God uses this text in all of our lives. And literally, thinking back to someone from my previous days, and he's still alive today, I would love God to use Joseph to pump you up in dealing with temptation. Because was it strong? Yes, but he had some tactics. He had a temptation-resisting workout plan that we looked at today. So why don't you stand together as Joe closes us in prayer.